Welcome back to today's part three of the introduction to Rambam Sefer HaMitzvot. The last of the introductions. We will begin with the mitzvot next time. We opened up discussing just a quick biographical sketch of who we were dealing with, the various characters. We then moved on last year to discuss the Ramban and where the count of 613 even comes from. And today what I want to discuss is the Shorashim of the Rambam. Shorashim meaning, what's a Shoresh?
A root.
In this case, principles of the Rambam. You see, what the Rambam points out in his introduction to the Sefer HaMitzvos is that you need to have principles that are going to guide you, which are going to help you decide what are mitzvot that will make it into your list and what are not. Because if you put everything that you think is a mitzvah, a command to do or a command not to do, an asiyah lo taseh, into your list, you're going to end up with a count that far exceeds 613. So you need to have some sort of principles, and therefore he formulates in the introduction to his work, the Sefer HaMitzvos, 14 principles, which are going to be his guideposts for what mitzvos make it in and what mitzvos make it out. Now, two important things to think about. Number one is that we mentioned in the first year, the Rambam kind of is using Sefer HaMitzvos to write against the Baal Halachas Gedolos, the Bahak, who had his own formulation. So much of the time when the Rambam will be like, some people say this, but they're wrong, that's what he means. And therefore, when the Ramban, Nachmanides, came along and wrote a commentary on Sefer Mitzvos, writing about the places where he disagrees with Rambam, there are many times where he doesn't disagree with the Rambam, but what he's trying to do is defend the Bahag. Kind of saying, like, even though I don't agree with the Bahag, but he's not as crazy as you think, Rambam. Even though I think the Bahag might not be right, he's not, you know, coming out of left field, but this is the reason and the rationale behind the Bahag. That's number one. And number two is interesting. When you read the introduction to Sefer HaMitzvos, the Rambam writes, now that I've finished writing my magnum opus, the Peirush on Mishnayos, which he thought that would be his lasting legacy, I am now going to write a book documenting all of the mitzvos, the Yad HaChazaka, the Mishnah Torah. And he says, I need to write an introductory book to this book, Mishnah Torah, so now I'm going to write the Sefer HaMitzvos. The Sefer HaMitzvos is actually an introduction to the Yad HaChazaka, and now we're doing the introduction to the introduction. Makes it more fun that way. So what we're going to do today is, I'm going to tell you what we're going to do today now and what we're not going to do. These 14 principles, there's a tremendous amount in these 14 principles, and once you read with the Ramban, you have just a whole world here. In fact, I was talking to one of my friends last night, and he said that he heard from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein that if someone really wants to understand and get the real yedios, get real depth and breadth in Torah, they should go through the Rambam with the Ramban's commentary in Sefer HaMitzvos. So we're not going to do that. Today we're going to try to sum it up in just a few short minutes. So what I want to do is go through the 14, and I pulled out on your page, you see just a couple of comments on each of the 14 just to help us and elucidate a little bit what's going on here, just to give us an understanding so we can walk away with a bit of an understanding of the 14. And that's all. What I don't want to do is get involved in the weeds of all the 14. I don't want to get involved, especially you'll see the second principle. There is a tremendous, on the Bima, the second principle is a lot of controversy around. When I read it, you'll see why there's a lot of controversy around. We're not going to go into in depth. I'm sorry. We just don't have time for that. I just kind of want to give an overview of these are mitzvahs that make it in. These are the mitzvahs that don't make it in. This is why the Rambam chooses to put the mitzvahs that we're going to learn over the next year together in the Mishnah Torah. Sefer HaMitzvos. Does that work? Yes? No? Okay, fine. So, let's begin then. Says the Rambam. This is in his introduction to the Sefer HaMitzvos. The first of these principles, the number one principle of what makes it in, is that it is inappropriate to count rabbinic commandments in this category. We don't count the rabbanons in the category of mitzvahs d'oraisas. Seems pretty obvious, right? Seems pretty intuitive. Now, if you turn the page, we're going to do a little bit of turning now. You see, you look at the first principle where I brought down. Says the Rambam, let me explain what I'm talking about. You should know that it is not appropriate to bring up this topic to explain it. For since the words of the Talmud Makos, we saw the Gemara Makos of some law, you said there are 630 commandments stated to Moshe Sinai. How can we say something that is rabbinic? It purely states, it clearly states, they were stated to Moses at Har Sinai. How can we say about something rabbinic that is included in the count? However, we have been prompted to it. Meaning the Rambam is saying, like, it's almost ridiculous to even formulate this as one of the principles. Let me tell you what doesn't make it onto the list of Doraisas, the Rabbanans. Obvious, right? So why would I say this? What's the point of it? So says the Rambam, because there's always that one guy who said it, namely the Bahak. How can we say about some rabbinic that is included in the count? However, we've been prompted to it because many erred and counted the Chanukahites and the reading of the Megillah among the positive commandments. There are those who counted Megillah Esther and the obligation to light the Hanukkah candles, which, by the way, I hope to speak about on Thursday, Rosh Chodesh Kislev, Thanksgiving. There's a lot of overlap among the positive commandments. Now, here's actually the more striking part. And likewise, the hundreds blessings each day, okay, that we know, comforting the mourners, visiting the sick, burying the dead, clothing the naked, calculating the seasons and 18 days in which we complete the recitation of Hallel. All these are rabbinic. So I think the striking part is that he counts Bikur Cholim and Nichum Aveilim as rabbinic, which we will get to hopefully in a few weeks.
Similar
to Kiddush HaChodesh to some extent.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure which aspect of it. If we just silence our cell phones,
calendar,
thank you. The calendar's derisive. I don't know exactly what he means by it. I'm not sure. But what his point is that there are those who count these things in the list. So obviously the question we now have to ask ourselves is like, why in the world will you include something that's clearly rabbinic? The Hanukkah story did not happen to many, many years after Moses got the Torah at Har Sinai. That we can all agree on, even those who have questions about the historical veracity of when exactly Hanukkah took place. Everyone knows it did not take place at Har Sinai. So why in the world would the Baha'i even think of putting it in the list? So that's a very astute comment, and I want to discuss that on Thursday. That may be an answer. Yeah, you're saying that perhaps there's a concept of presuminisa, of publicizing the nace that Hashem did for us, and that may be what he's talking about. So that's definitely something we're going to talk about. We maybe we'll touch on it today. I wasn't going to, we'll touch on it today. But so I'll tell you, I was talking to my friend last night, Rabbi Noach Goldstein, is a Rosh Chabura in the Kol in Chicago. He said to me, I said, do you have any answer for this? He said, the Ramban didn't have an answer. Why are you asking me this question? But I'll tell you, the Rambam tries to give some sort of justification, because it's so bad. Even the Rambam felt the need to give a justification, and then just like, you know, go swipe his hand, forget it. He says as follows, it appears to me what led them to this is that we make the blessing on the commandments. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Asher Krishanu Mitzvosav V'tzivanu. We say, blessed be you are God, thou art Lord, using the Birnbaum or the Koran, who has sanctified us with the commandments, in which the Gemara already asked the question, how can we say God has sanctified us with the commandment to lay in Megillah, to do any of the mitzvahs derabbanans when God didn't sanctify us, it came from Chachamim. And therefore, says the Rambam, based on the Gemara and Shabbos, when were we commanded on lighting the Megillah? On lighting the Megillah. No, we weren't commanded on lighting the Megillah. We're commanded on lighting the Hanukkah candles and reading the Megillah. Although sometimes at a certain point on Purim, maybe we think we're commanded to light the Megillah. But that's the nature of the day. And when are we commanded? Because the Pasuk tells us, lo sasor, that we're not supposed to veer from the words of Chazal, meaning to say, how do we know, why are the words of Chazal, our sages, binding? Because the Torah tells us, listen to the words of the sages. So much so, there's a prohibition to veer from the words of the sages. And therefore, because now that gives the words of the sages the binding power to instill and institute mitzvos, so therefore we can say, Asher Krishan Mitzvosav, meaning God commanded us to listen to the sages who told us to light the candles, to read the Megillah. So, says the Ramban, if this is true,
that would be a blanket for all of them.
Exactly. So, one. Okay, so number one, it says the Rambam, if this is true, that they're basing it on the fact that the Torah says that Chazal were, we listen to Chazal because the Torah says, follow the words of the sages, so then why is the Baha'i only counting a couple of the mitzvot, count all of them. So that's what the Rambam says. The Rambam says, I can't be right. I can't be right that my theory that the reason why he counts these mitzvot derabanan is because we have an obligation to listen, a biblical obligation to listen to the words of the rabbis, because if that is true, then it should be all the rabbanan. See, that's what the Rambam says. Good. But Inbar raises... So Inbar and Eliot are raising a more crucial point, and that's as follows. Says the Ramban, excuse me, Rabbi Dr. Maimonides, I have a problem. If you are telling me that the obligation to listen to the words of the rabbis is biblical, which everyone's going to agree to, but the way in which you're formulating is that there's a biblical command to listen to the sages, so that if one were not to light the candles on Hanukkah, seemingly not only are they violating a rabbinic prohibition, a rabbinic command, they're also now in violation of a biblical prohibition of not listening to the words of the sages. As you're saying, what you're essentially doing is you're blurring the distinction between derabanan and deoraisa. What is the point of saying we have derabanans and deoraisas, biblical commands and rabbinic commands, if what the Rambam is essentially saying is every rabbinic command really is a biblical command of listening to the words of the sages? And if that is so, we have many principles which we utilize, which are specifically targeted to the fact that there are distinctions between derabanan and deoraisa. Give me the most famous one. Suffer deoraisa l'chumra, suffer derabanan l'kula. That when we have a case of doubt, is something a certain way or something not a certain way? We touched upon this a little bit Friday night. When it's biblical, we go l'chumra, we're stringent. When it's derabanan, then we go l'kula. Well, according to the Rambam, says Nachmanides, you've obliterated this entire principle. Why? Because you could never have a case of suffix derabanan, a case of rabbinic doubt, because every case of rabbinic doubt is really a case of biblical doubt, because you're not listening to the words of the sages. This is what the Ramban says. So it opens up a couple questions. Number one is, what's going on here? Number two is also, if this is true, that the Rambam says the reason we have to listen to the words of the sages is because the Torah says we have to, and the Ramban's like, no, it can't be, so then according to the Ramban, why do we listen to the words of the sages? Like, what's his reason for listening to the words of the sages if it can't be in the Torah? I mean, I just have a lot to say right now, so say the question at the end if you can. I'll give you another principle. Gemara Pesachim on Daf Hey Amid Aleph going to Hey Amid Beis says as follows. We trust people whom we normally don't trust, as in who normally don't have nemanas, don't have trust in court. We trust them to check a house for chametz. Meaning to say, if a katan, a child says, or a woman says, this house is clean, I checked it, we believe them. The Gemara says, I don't understand. Normally when it comes to cases that require nemanas, testimony, we do not rely on the testimony of nashim v'katanim. So why do we listen here? So the Gemara goes back and forth, and ultimately the Gemara answers and says, 1 minute, what's going on here? So we know, on Erev Pesach, we do a couple things. We search the house for chametz, but what else do we do? What do we say? Kol chamira. All chametz I have should be nullified, should be void, should be hefker, whatever exactly we're doing there. Well, the Gemara tells us, once we say all our chametz is null and void, we've now eliminated the biblical issue of ownership of chametz. So the reason we're checking our house for chametz is not biblical, but it's only rabbinic, for whatever reason, because we're afraid that even if you say my Danish is null and void, well, if you find a Danish on Pesach and it looks good, maybe you'll take a bite out of it. So because we have the issue that we don't want to run into the fact that we will see a null and void piece of dust, which is a beautiful, delicious Danish, which is oozing out chocolate, so Durabanan, the Rabbi's Institute, we still have to check our homes. Well, therefore the Gemara says, at this point in Erev Pesach, once you have declared all your chametz to be null and void, now we're only dealing in the realm of derabanan. Hemnunu rabanan al rabanan. The rabanan say, we will trust a child's testimony on a rabbinic stricture in this case. Hemnunu rabanan al rabanan. So here again, says the Ramban, Nachmanides, if you blur the distinction between biblical commands and rabbinic commands, derabanan and deraisa, then we've also eliminated hemnunu rabanan al rabanan. We've eliminated it because I just want to push to the end. Why have we eliminated it? Because every rabbinic command is also a biblical command. So I don't think it's the strongest question. I have a feeling you're going to say this, because what we'll say is as follows. Chazal, our sages, instituted rabbanans, And when they instituted Rabbanans, they said, and these, when it's a Rabbanan, although you have to listen to us because of Los Asor, you have to listen to us because the Torah says so, we instituted and we orchestrated in the way in which we instituted the Takana, that if it's a doubt, you don't have to listen to us. It's a suffix. It's a suffix. When it's a doubt, we could trust the Katan. It's also, by the way, interesting, parenthetically, or maybe it's actually very much related, this that we say, Savak de Rabbanan Lekula, Savak de Arais Lechumra. When it's a rabbinic, we go lenient. When it's deraisa, biblical, we go stringent. That itself is subject to debate. Is that a biblical command or a rabbinic command? The Rambam is of the opinion that's actually on a level of deraisa, even a suffix deraisa is lakula. That also, I think, plays into it as well. And I think there's a lot more to say on this. I don't want to get bogged down, but also you can ask, what's the nature of this? Why exactly are we going lachumr? Are we going lachumr because the stakes are higher? Right, the stakes are high because you might actually be let's say you might end up eating pig if there's a suffix. Is there pig in here? Not pig in here. The stakes are much higher. You're going to eat pig. Where if it's a rabbanan, okay, the stakes are lower. Or maybe no, it's just something about the very fact that it's a deraisa that we have to follow it. Okay, but I don't want to get into that. Why am I saying all this? Why did I get on this little bit tangent? So when the Rambam says here, so the Rambam here says, why do we have to listen to, why would the Bahag count these mitzvahs the rabbanan? Says the Rambam, because maybe there's a biblical command for these mitzvahs, which what the Ramban says, well, if you've obliterated the difference, you've blurred the lines, you've blurred the distinction between the Rabbanan and the Raisa. And the answer we gave, according to the Ramban, is, I think, a very simple, intuitive one, and that is, no, when the sages instituted these Rabbanans, they also said, and in the case of doubt, you don't have to go L'chumra. There happens to be a bit of more of an interesting answer, which Rav Michael Rosenzweig put forth. I thought it was actually quite fascinating, and that was as follows. There are many derabbanans that one can argue, although the rabbis are the ones who instituted it, what's backing them is some sort of more deraisa principle, some sort of deraisa motif, if you will. And let's use Yair's example, although we may repeat it again on Thursday. Halal itself, and by the way, the Rambam points this out, the Rambam's like, halal, how can halal be deraisa? It's words from Tehillim. It's words from Tehillim, not going to be Doraisa. Now, anyone who was here for the prayer shiur last year, we quoted the Shuvah Rashba on this book. That's just for those who remember or take notes. But how can Hallel be Doraisa, right? It's words from Hallel. David HaMelech came way later. So what may be going on here is, although Hallel was rabbinically instituted, but it was based off some larger principle of when you experience a nes, when you experience some sort of salvation, you have an obligation to praise God. How you praise God is to then Chazal come along and say, we'll give you some of the tools. We'll give you some structure how to do it. But in the event that you don't praise God, you're actually in violation of some sort of larger Doraisa principle. Yeah.
Yeah, but the Shir Shal Yom that we say every day, supposedly, which is also from Tehillim, supposedly was also said in the Beis Hamikdash.
That's fine.
Right?
That's fine, but don't know
why
before this. Don't know before that. We're talking about in Har Sinai.
On Har Sinai.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll give you a couple other examples. I'll give examples that have come up over the course of this year from various questions I've gotten. Let's see. Someone asked me this year, I don't know who it was, about Shabbos. The Ramban, Nachmanides, actually makes this comment. He says a person who's a Talmud Chacham, who knows how to basically game the system, can operate their business on Shabbos. Why? He says, because ultimately, think about if you own a store, what biblical prohibition are you violating?
You might be violating carrying,
in the store itself?
Not
in the store itself. What's the problem with handling money? It's muksa because you might come to right. He goes, hire a non-Jew to like do the part that may actually be an issue, and you can really have your store operate kadasu kadin. Says the Ramban, you're still over a biblical prohibition of you have to rest on Shabbos. It's more of a meta biblical prohibition. And therefore, again, I think what you can argue is there are certain rabbinic strictures, certain rabbinic ideas that behind them are biblical precepts. I'll give you...
Doesn't the Gemara talk about the rabbis instituting extra stringencies about commerce on Shabbos specifically because
it could be.
Of the lack of Shabbos?
Yeah, it could be, for sure.
The lack of rest?
Yeah, yes, for sure.
I thought money, the issue was weighing and measuring.
No, the money, the issues might come to right. Which makes like they tell you sign the receipt. There's also issues. That's their abundance as well.
Oh, it is.
That's their abundance as well.
Can't you hire a non-Jew?
Yes, but that's the Ramban's point. You can hire a non-Jew to do all these things.
Yeah,
and you can stand in your store and say, do this, do that, do this. You know, there's no Darabanan, Daraisa you're being over here, but that you can pinpoint.
But you're benefiting from.
Okay, so now we're getting into more of benefiting from Shabbos work, which might be only be Darabanan. But what the point I'm trying to highlight is, behind these rabbinic things, there may be a biblical principle. I'll give you another one, if you will. What else came up this year? You know what, let's do the one before. Bikur Cholim. Bikur Cholim. The Rambam says Bikur Cholim is only Darabanan, but extends from the Pasuk of Yahavta L'Recha Kamocha, which is fascinating. That the actual action of Bikur Cholim might be Darabanan, but if you do it the wrong way, you may be in violation of Yahavta L'Recha Kamocha. So again, the point is that there are certain meta d'oraisa principles. That one, the actual action, if I were to look at the action, what action am I doing now by laying the Megillah? It's a Darabanan. But I am also somehow fulfilling a more d'oraisa principle of praising Hashem. Therefore, perhaps one can also argue that when the Rambam says that every Darabanan has a Daraisa, he doesn't mean literally every Darabanan, but what he's trying to say is there are many, many Darabanans, or perhaps the Darabanans here, that the Bahag is saying, that he counts in the list. That's probably a better way of looking at it. The Darabanans the Bahag counts in the list. The specific ones he counts in the list, like Megillah and Hanukkah, it's because these are the ones behind it, have a larger meta Daraisa principle. I think it's an interesting idea. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, if you have the larger principle, and that's the Daraisa, why didn't that need the Darabanan as an example of the Daraisa? It's kind of it's unnecessary.
You have to praise God when something happens. You experience a miracle. Come around the rabbis and say, we're going to give you a structure how to do it. It's called Hallel. I'll give you another example. There's a big debate, is Cholamoid Darabanan or Daraisa? As in the prohibition to do work on Cholamoid. Which is interesting because that becomes a debate. That the question you want to ask yourself based off this is, and Chol Moed is everything Asr until proven Mutter, everything Mutter until proven Asr. There are those who want to argue, I believe Rav Shach has an essay on this, the Karen Orah has an essay on this, Mishnah Zayvitz has an essay on this, that all work on Chol Moed, the actual work itself, whatever is prohibited, is Durabanon, but the reason they did it is because one is not allowed to treat Chol Moed like a regular day. That's Daraisa. The fact that the Chol Moed has to be distinct and different than a regular weekday, that's a Daraisa principle. How do you do that? Well, it's very unclear, so the rabbis came along and said, we'll help you. Don't do this type of work. Don't do that type of work. Don't do this type of work. Oh, but in the event that you're going to lose a lot of money, so now we give you a dispensation. So that's kind of like what's going on here. I think it's a fascinating idea how much power, in a way, Chazal were given, that they can actually utilize Daraisa principles by instituting Darabanan.
So if someone's not fulfilling, say, risen the sick, is he violating Darabanan and Daraisa?
It seems there is an element of Yahavta L'Recha Kamocha. And yet, we're going to discuss Yahavta L'Recha Kamocha in a few weeks from time, but there definitely is an element of one is able to violate Yahavta L'Recha Kamocha. Right? I just think I've talked many times, really because I got it from my Rebbe, Rav Feldman, that we often think of Yahavta L'Recha Kamocha as a positive thing. Oh, be nice to your neighbor. You know, bring him a gift when he moves in, be nice. But there are many Rishonim who actually only learn as a negative. Don't do unto your friend what you don't want done to yourself.
I understand the idea of there's a Daraisa principle and Bahag is mentioning the Darabanan. I get that. But the Bahag is specifically listing these within a limited list of 613. If it's a principle that the actual Daraisa, why isn't he just listing the principle instead of going
into... Yeah. So this is why I said I don't want to get into the weeds because there are a lot more questions than answers on this one. And the Ram himself, kind of the Ram's like, hey, I don't know what's going on here. And he's like, I'm only saying, you would think I wouldn't even have to start the list stating the obvious. It's like the teacher gets up there the first day and says, no one has to do something crazy. The reason they're saying that is because they know there are some kids who just do wild things. So, yeah, you're right. It is a little troublesome. I want to move on from here. Is it really quick?
Yeah,
it
was similar to what...
Okay, so then, again, I don't want to get bogged down because there's a lot more to do and we're not going to get to all of it. Okay? We can discuss afterwards. Okay, what's the second principle? This is perhaps the most controversial of all the principles, and that is, the second principle is, it is inappropriate to count anything that we learn from the 13 hermeneutic principles through which the Torah is expounded on, or from technical inclusion. Meaning to say, that we say every day, or we should say every day, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Bishlosha Asa Midas, the Torah Nedrashat Behem. There are 13 ways, and there's another Bryce there where there's 24 ways, that the Torah is, we derive principles from the Torah, meaning things are not explicitly in the Torah, but we derive things from the Torah. And here as well, the Rambam says anything learned from that, we're not going to add to this list. This is, again, a minefield. I'm going to just leave it at that. Give me one second here. How much time we have?
2 hours.
Okay, let's go another 4 or 5 minutes. Okay, the third commandment is it is inappropriate to count. The third principle, excuse me, is that it's inappropriate to count commandments that are not practiced for all generations. If there's a commandment in the Torah that's not for all generations, we don't count it. Look at the Rambam's example. Look in 3. It's on page number 2. For instance, he says, when the Torah was given at Har Sinai, we say, be ready on the third day to accept the Torah. That was a command to the Jewish people, to be ready on the third day. Well, that was just for them, in that generation. This is under 3. Furthermore, it says, neither shall the flocks and the herds graze on Har Sinai. Har Sinai was sanctified, consecrated during the time in which the Torah was given. People weren't allowed to go on the mountain. The animals are not allowed to go on the mountain. That was a temporary prohibition. Subsequent to that, we can go on the mountain. In fact, you ask any Israeli cab driver, they'll take you to a random mountain in the middle of Israel and say, hop up in the mountain. That's Har Sinai. Yeah.
I mean, that's even the Torah says it was temporary.
Correct. And we actually even derive the principle of, we derive principles from there that, correct. We derive certain principles from there as well. No, in the sense we derive that anything that is instituted needs a bezin gadol mechachol minin to matir it. Okay, fine. But he says he goes on to quote Har Grizim and Har Evel. The fact that when we went to Israel, we said Har Grizim, Har Evel. These are all temporary things that we aren't going to count. Now, lest you think this is back those in the biblical stories, the Torah was, certain commandments were given. So there's actually a fascinating Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who says this is more applicable than you think. And this actually comes to last week's shir. We have a command every single day to recite twice a day, Kriyishma. We also have a command to mention, says the Mishnah in Brachos, Perek Aleph Mishnah Hey, Maskirin Yitzias Betrayim Belelos. Meaning to say, this is a Mishnah we all are familiar with because it comes up in the Haggadah, that when we say Kriyishma, Shema Yisrael Vayim Shema, we also say Vayomer at night. Why do we say Vayomer at night? So the Mishnah tells us because there's an obligation to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim every single day. Mention the fact we're taking it out of Mitzrayim every single day. Well, guess who doesn't count that obligation in their list? The Rambam. And everyone scratches their head like, what do you mean? It's like explicit. One has to count the obligation that we left Mitzrayim in that list. Why would he not count in the list? So the two answers given, both are given from Rav Chaim. One is written in a few places. One I haven't seen inside in a while, but I think it's in the Yartzeit Shirim. The Rav brings it down. So it could be the reasoning why the Rambam doesn't count Yetzias Mitzrayim in the list is because Rav Chaim says there's two obligations when it comes to remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim. There is the obligation of Sifur Yetzias Mitzrayim, of talking about it. That comes up once a year, and then there's the obligation to remember it every single day. Think of Sifur Yetzias Mitzrayim as like Mother's Day. I think it's ridiculous when you have the person like, oh, every day is Mother's Day, so why am I going to celebrate it? Yeah, but you don't. You don't bring your mother flowers every single day. Let's be honest. So we have, once a year, we say, set aside, talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's the din of Sifur. It looks different. A, we're talking about it, or Chaim says that the zechira, the remembrance we do every day is just a remembrance. It's between you and yourself. You just say it to yourself, whereas the Sipur, there's a whole structure how you do it. You're supposed to say it to your children, to other people. There's a back and forth, a give and take. That give and take, the Manash Tan, in fact, is very much part of the Sipur. It's supposed to be a structure to how it looks, that it's more than just, I'm mentioning it, but it's coming as part of the Mesorah. He also points out that when you just say it, okay, so I'm remembering what God did for us. When you say it over as a Sipur, as a story, that actually engenders the obligation now to of Hallel. Of Shira v'Tishbachos. It's the challah we do Seder night. It's a fundamentally different challah than the challah we're going to do Thursday, Friday this week, because that's just a challah we say Rosh Chodesh, which is actually a minhag, or the challah on a Yom Tov, which is a challah we say because it's a Yom Tov. The challah on Seder night, the challah we say because of the nace. It's a very different challah. There's differences between the Sipur, the fact we're sitting around saying it Seder night, versus the remembrance every single day. Now the question is, so why does the Rambam not count it in the list? Says Rav Chaim, you see, because there's one other distinction between the halal, the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, the obligation to say it over once a year, and the Zechira every single night. Whereas Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, as we said, you say it over within the structure of a family, you're back and forth, and it engenders a Shira's halal v'sishbachos. The last distinction is, the reason we say it every single day is because what we're trying to do is remember what was the point of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Not just that we became a nation, but says the Ramban in Parshas Bo, it's through Yetzias Mitzrayim we remember that God exists, that God knows what's going on in this world, and that God is intimately involved in what's going on in this world. In a word, what we're doing is we're being mekabel olmach haShemayim. We're accepting upon ourselves the yoke of heaven when we remember the nace of Yetzias Mitzrayim every single day. And if that is true, so says Rav Chaim, that there is an obligation to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim every day, but the Rambam counts it as part of Kriya Shema. Now there's another approach. Rav Chaim has a different answer. Not that it's part of Kriya Shema, but look at this Mishnah that we all are familiar with. Maskinu Yetzias Mitzrayim b'leilos. We have an obligation to say Vayomer at night. Why? Because if they're mentioned, Yetzias Mitzrayim at night. Omer Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Arei ani ben shiv mishana, v'lo zechizi shtam rei Yetzias Mitzrayim b'leilos. I'm 70 years old. What do you mean, like I'm 70 years old? So it's the famous story in Brachos that he was appointed one night to be the Nasi, the leader, but he was a young Tzair, a young man. So he woke up the next day, he looked old, now everyone listened to him. Good. Shadrosh ben Zoma, he said, I thought, I didn't know there was an obligation, or I didn't know where the obligation stemmed from to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at night. At this point, you can all spill your wine by mistake. Shadrosh ben Zoma, Shinemar, until ben Zoma comes along and says, L'man tizgars yom tizgah merah to try and call you mechayecha. That is an obligation to remember the day that you came out of Egypt all the days of your life. Yemei chayecha hayamim. The words yemei chayecha imply the days of your life. Kol yemei chayecha halelos. And kol yemei chayecha, the extra word kol means to include the night, a dual obligation both during the day and at night to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim. V'chachamim omrim, say the sages say chazal, no. Yemei chayecha ha'olam hazeh. The words of Yemei Chayech are this world. Kol Yemei Chayech Lahavim Los Mashiach. Only is your life but to include the Messianic era, meaning to say that even when Mashiach comes, you experience a greater salvation than Yetzias Mitzrayim, even then we still have an obligation to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim. Which implies, we say this every single year on the Seder, says Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, if you read the Mishnah carefully, what is one of the differences between Ben Zoma and Chachamim? Ben Zoma, who in fact we passed him like, and the Chachamim? According to the Chachamim, when is the obligation to recite Kriya Shema? Excuse me, to recite Yetzias Mitzrayim? Both now and when Mashiach comes. Whereas Ben Zoma says no. We read the pasuk to tell us you recite Kriya Shema during the day. Excuse me, Yetzias Mitzrayim during the day and at night, implying that when Mashiach comes, there's no obligation to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why would that be? As we just said, because the salvation will be so much greater. We're not going to talk about the smaller salvation. It's kind of like World War I was going to the war to end all wars, and then World War II came around. Like World War I is now just in the history books. That's what happens. Well, says Rav Chaim, if this is true, it would be possibly Ben Zoma that when Mashiach comes, we're not going to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim every single day. It's not a mitzvah that's there to last. It's a mitzvah until Mashiach comes. It's not a mitzvah for eternity. And therefore, the Rambam is not going to count in his list because the principle number three is, as we just said, principle number three is, it is inappropriate to count commandments that are not practiced for generations, as in for eternity. Wow, that's awesome, no?
That you need to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim day and night, and therefore the Rambam counts it as one. Did you say the Rambam counted remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim during the day?
No, he's counted that all. Yeah, correct.
The implication is that all the mitzvahs that we do count are for eternity.
Correct. A Torah ain't a chlefa. The Torah is not going to change. It's one of the Yud-Gimli Karm, one of the 13 principles of the Rambam. Yes.
Even when
Mashiach comes. The Rambam is of the opinion that when Mashiach comes, quoting Shmuel and Shabbos, there's no difference between nowadays and when Mashiach comes. Elo shibud malchus bavad, except we will be in control. We'll be the rulers. And then that happens, he can set. So that's, we're not going to get into, I don't know, what the Rambam's conception of Gan Eden is in the Ramban. That's a whole different discussion. There's a Gemara in Nid that talks about mitzvahs, the tables, plus of level, mitzvahs will be nullified what, in the world to come. What does that mean? Not for now. Okay, so now I left you with the rest. You can kind of go through and see what the rest of the principles are, the fifth principle, the sixth principle, the seventh principle, etc. Again, I want to just give a basic overview. You can see this can take many, many shurim, but I want to already begin with the mitzvot, but a quick overview of just the thought process of the Rambam. So again, today what we saw was the first principle is inappropriate to count Rabbanans. Seems obvious, but the Rambam said, oh, perhaps because every Rabbanan has deraisa, which then we ask, 1 minute, if that's true, so you've now gotten rid of all these principles that rely on the fact that there are Rabbanans. To which we gave two answers. We gave an answer that was said it was no. When the rabbis instituted things, they also instituted it with the caveat that when there's a suffix or when it comes to believing as in Hamnuna Rabbanan or Rabbanan, we allow for that. We also gave an answer from Rav Rosenzweig that perhaps the Bahag is saying I'm counting these specific Rabbanans because these ones actually have the Oraisa principles behind them. We then saw the second principle, which was we don't count things that are learned out of the Yud Gimel Midos Shatorin Drashupim. We didn't we weren't there for too long, and then we went to the third principle, and that is, we don't count commandments that are not practiced for all generations, and we said it's not just the biblical stories when God says don't come on the mountain, but in fact, Rav Chaim learns out, the fact that we don't count Yitzias B'Tzrayim, the mitzvah that says Yitzias B'Tzrayim every single day is either because it's part of the mitzvah of Krishma, of Kabbalah Zman HaShemayim, or because it's not going to be around, as Ben Zalman says, when Mashiach comes, I wish you all a wonderful week, and looking forward to Thanksgiving.